battle.
O son of Surabi, you need lament. Voice is weird. O son of Surabi, you need lament no longer now. O son of Surabi, you need lament no longer. There is no need to fear this low class Shudra. And oh, mother cow, as long as I am living as the ruler and subduer of all envious men, there is no cause for you to cry. Everything will be good for you. Die. So Prabhupada ki jai. So we go to purport.
Oh, okay. So you might have to mute now? Just 1 second, Maharaj.
Oh.
Let me just mute everybody on free conferencing. That's an easy one. 1 second. Okay. Now the harder part is to get everybody quiet on Skype. So please, everybody who's on Skype right now, we need you to mute yourself so the Maharaj can speak without disruption. Thank you,
yeah.
Maharaj.
Okay. Purport. I should follow up. Protection of bulls and cows and all other animals can be possible only when there is a state ruled by an executive head like Maharaj Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit addresses the cow as mother, for he is a cultured, twice-born Kshatriya king. Surabhi is the name of the cows, which exist in the spiritual planets and are especially reared by Lord Sri Krishna himself. As men are made in the form and features of the Supreme Lord, so also the cows are made after the form and features of the Surabhi cows in the spiritual kingdom. In the material world, the human society gives all protection to the human being, but there is no law to protect the descendants of Surabhi, who can give all protection to men by supplying the miracle food, milk. But Maharaj Parikshit and the Pandavas were fully conscious of the importance of the cow and bull, and they were prepared to punish the cow killer with all chastisements, including death. There has sometimes been agitation for the protection of the cow. But for want of pious executive heads and suitable laws, the cow and bull are not given protection. The human society should be recognized, the human society should recognize that, where to go here, the importance of the cow and the bull, and thus give all protection to these important animals, following the footsteps of Maharaj Parikshit. For protecting the cows and Brahminical culture, the Lord, who is very kind to the cow and Brahmanas, go Brahmana Hitaya, will be pleased with us and will bestow upon us real peace. Die. So Prabhupada ki. Die. Go Mataji ki. Die. Of course, again, this is the first canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. Tato Jayam Udirayat. Srimad Bhagavatam is our very means of conquest. Just by giving regular, attentive oral reception to Srimad Bhagavatam, all of our doubts and confusion are destroyed at the heart. And then we can defend ourselves against the onslaught of atheists. At the same time, we can be able to convince others of the existence of God as a concrete fact. That. So it's real intelligence, Srimad Bhagavatam. We're continuing with these Bhakti Bhai Bhava efforts, studies. Actually, just before this, we had about an hour and 45-minute class here with the devotees locally. We're in northern Peru. You leave Lima, it takes about what? The bus took about 12 hours, a little more even. But it's very beautiful because it goes right up the coast. And it's desert. But the ocean is visible. Pacific Ocean is visible. A lot of it on the left. And the right, there's hills, mountains, and the desert. So actually quite refreshing. Buses are good, luxury bus. And then it arrives in Chiclayo. And Chiclayo is like a city, like that, pretty good size. There's no regular university. There's some branches, but there's no regular university like that. Maybe like four or five high schools. And then about 20 minutes away is Ferrañafe, the town of poets. There's some famous poet here. And it's like only one public and two private high schools here. And a small town center. But it's more like a town, you know. Not too big. Like Mindanao maybe. And then maybe like 10 minutes more, and you're in the country where we are. And one devotee he bought, it's called a chakra. And it's about, I think, 20 acres. And he started subdividing a Pioneer. And so devotees have bought different sized parcels. And he's about 6 acres or something, which is pretty robust, you know. And then where we are staying is in Yadu Das's house. And he's a very, ingenious fellow, a little bit of Vaishya. So he built a really beautiful house, you know, brick. It's not very big, but it's about 3 stories. And there are different kinds of peaks and tops, and so it looks very nice. You feel very satisfied just to look at the house. And all around us is basically a kind of like desert kind of atmosphere. It's called, semi-arid savanna. It rains sometimes, and the water table is only about 4 feet to 9 feet below the ground. So you dig a well, and it hasn't got to be real deep. Right now, it's because it's the dry season, pretty much, the water is down to about maybe 6 feet or something, you know. And the worst, it gets down to about 9 feet. So he pumps water up to the house, and we have water all the time for bathing and everything else. Pioneer has 2 good-sized rice fields going. Other devotee, Eka Chakra, somebody else, Mahavirya. He got a little house in Ferrañafe, because he comes out here regularly. He has also some rice going. So the government has canals that go through and on a regular basis, so people can, you know, water their rice regularly. But it depends upon the rain. You can see that very much. Yesterday the rains were late, and so all the rice hasn't turned yellow yet. You can see the grains of rice there, but it's going to be a real, what's the word, like iffy thing, because the winter is already starting to come, so the rice is slowing down in its maturity. So it looks like it'll harvest, but it's not going to be a real like big bumper crop and stuff. So it's one thing, because you live like this, right away you realize that we're dependent upon on nature. You know? In Boise, Idaho, again, there was like a water shortage, and then people suddenly began to realize, no water, no electricity. Yeah, and the water is coming from electricity. Yeah? Electricity is coming from the water. And so all living beings, I'm kind of choking here on the air, dry. Yeah, all living beings subsist upon food grains. Food grains come from rain. So rain comes from sacrifice. The sacrifice comes from prescribed duties, and prescribed duties are mentioned in the Vedas. Yeah? So you really could appreciate that here. The road that goes through our land, there's the house of Pioneer, the house of Mahavir, where we are, and then Vaitanath, also from Chiclayo, he's built like a little one-room place. He's trying to grow some stuff too. The trees, if you water them, their roots get down. It takes about 2 or maybe 3 years, and their roots get deep enough to be able to handle the dry weather like that. So the trees can make it. Yeah, it's very, very. We would go to someplace better, like if you go more north to Guayaquil, there it's like Bengal, and you get three harvests every year, there's water in abundance, but that's pretty far, you know, the distance and stuff like that. And back in Lima, the water table is like, you know, 50 feet or something like that, minimum, like a real desert area. So best use of a bad bargain. And then Pioneer opened a restaurant, Govinda's restaurant in Chiclayo. It's like that. It's already kind of a little bit of a developed community with everybody just taking responsibility for their own lives and helping each other. And trees do grow. Now coming to this point of cows and animals, you know, human beings, they're mosquitoes. Maybe I mentioned this when we arrived here. We got out of the car at night, taxi. About 8 devotees came all together. We all came together. And right away, about 10,000 mosquitoes. That'd be like 25 mosquito bites on our feet before you make it into the house. They'd never seen such a bumper crop of mosquitoes before. So really, we're fighting with those. You know? But then after a few days, they went down to about, like, it's about 100 mosquitoes now. 100. Yeah. But the amazing thing is that we're chanting Hare Krishna. Everybody gets up for Mangalarti. You have kirtan and regular classes. And you feel so much internal strength that all these bites and everything else, and they all get a little bit infected. Somehow or other, all the mosquitoes have some kind of virus or something. So after about 3 days, they're all kind of a little bit infected. And so, but it's all superficial. Yeah, superficial, if you feel. And you really feel the advantage of being out in the country. In the city, your mind spreads out. Your mind is thinking, oh, there's this this place, that place. This is McDonald's is here. That ice cream store is there. That general goods store is there. But here, your mind kind of expands out, and there's nothing but, you know, but sun, fields, crops, and animals. So it really makes a much difference in terms of, you know, writing and internal work like that. Yeah. Yeah. So it's been a very good experience. Our idea is to try and develop the rural development here. Actually, we're only spending 2 weeks in Lima this time, and we've already been 3 weeks. We're going to be here. In Trujillo, which is about 3 hours south, they have big universities there. And we had incredible programs there. They invited us to come for a big national symposium in the fall. So we're talking about writing some books together. So preaching Sankirtan. So then right next to us, Yadu, when he built his house, he, of course, had 5 acres. But he chose it to build it right next to the fence. And other side of the fence is this evangelical family. And, of course, Catholics are the biggest religion here. Then after them, probably the evangelicals are the biggest. And then just quite considerable Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons. That's about it. So there are a lot of them. And I think it's a father, his son, basically a grandfather, his son, his daughter-in-law, and their children. And about, I think, 5 people like that in the house. And the whole house, their house is like a fortress. It's like and I was noticing other houses here like that. It's all made of brick, local bricks, and about 2 stories tall with little tiny windows. Yeah, but it has a nice courtyard at the side, so really it's established for primitive living. And maybe I mentioned this about a month ago. Some thieves, they put out poison to meat, and all Pioneer's dogs, really nice dog, he ate it. Our dog ate it, the neighbor's dog ate it, and so all the dogs died. And devotees were crying and chanting Hare Krishna for their dogs, you know. And everybody kind of had a suspicion that this is thieves, you know, because the way they work. Because, of course, when the dogs are all dead, they don't bark. And you can see the cooperation between men and animals. You know? To kind of digress, you know, this cooperation about protecting all the animals. We don't eat chickens, and we don't eat them. But if you have them, they stay around the house, you know, because then they're protected from foxes and things like that. And they patrol. They eat spiders. They eat scorpions. Yeah? So patrolling around the house, they keep it all free from all these kind of insects and stuff like that. And also, of course, they look very beautiful, kind of moving around. It's like a little flower vase moving around here and there. And they make nice sounds, cluck cluck, you know, and cock-a-doodle-doo. But at nighttime, you have some places that be protected from the foxes. So you see, there's this very natural symbiotic relationship between different animals. And human beings are meant to use their intelligence to try and coordinate this relationship like that. Make sure everybody is properly protected and properly engaged, you know, in their work. And of course, chicken dip is wonderful fertilizer. You know. So the evangelical family, other side of the fence, they're raising cows. You know. I have about 14 cows, a little baby. One baby came about a few weeks ago. And they take care of them. They get out there. They're up like about 5:30 in the morning. They're out there before the sun rises, giving them food. And I think they milk the mother really early like that. She has to be milked several times. And they grow corn, you know. So they give the green part to the cows, and they feed them, you know, regular corn like that. And you can see they have a personal relationship with them. But according to the circumstances, they're going to send all of them down the road. It's kind of like the euphemistic way of saying we're going to kill them. You know, we're going to send them down the road. So these thieves actually came. We weren't here then, but they came like pretty much late at night, confident that there would be no dogs, you know, to wake anybody up. And they do. They just walk off with the cows, and then they have a truck waiting someplace, and they go off. And of course, you can imagine how much each cow is worth in terms of, like, you know, selling to the slaughterhouse. So Yadu doesn't have a gun. We're Brahmins. And the neighbors also, we don't have a gun. So also kind of Brahminical family. He showed us the church. You go out on the main road, a little simple two-lane asphalt highway. At about 5 minutes or less, there's a little church by the road, a side evangelical church. And that's where their congregation meets, maybe about 40, 50 people. So they go there regularly. And then once a month, the congregation comes to their members' houses. So he says every month the people all come and they sing hymns together, like a Namahata program. Devotees had a wedding here after we arrived, and devotees made a nice, like, you know, fire pit, and the priest was all dressed up like Vedic. The devotee, Pushpa Gopal, a very older devotee, and mantras and decorations and flowers. So all the neighbors, the grandfather sat in the chair on the other side of the fence with his son leaning on the post. The ladies were on the other side there, the kids. I mean, they just watched the whole thing. You know, for them it was completely natural because they're Peruvians. So they're so used to, like, these Inca traditions and stuff like that. But they were just watching. And then afterwards, they took the lamp around, that kind of stuff, and they all touched it and everything. So they had no incompatibility with Oriental, you know, religious marriages. And they could see, yeah, it's very nice they're being married. They hold their hands. They walk around the fire. It was very natural. That's why preaching in this area has that advantage, that people, they've been able to mix their Christianity with their, what's the word, pantheism, you know, from the earlier cultures. Still very active. You know? Yeah. So anyway, the thieves came, and we didn't have guns. The neighbor didn't have guns. But the other neighbor, he's about 2.5 blocks away, the closest other neighbor. He was more like a Kshatriya guy, so he came out with his shotgun and started blasting away. And the thieves showed the other cheek. we Christians were showing the other cheek, but at that point the thieves showed the other cheek and started running for their lives with this guy and blasting away. And they may have got a little bit of buckshot in there where they were going. I think he felt like a little proud. You know, okay, yeah, my neighbors are good people. They don't have guns, you know, stuff, but I do, and I know how to deal with these guys. You know. So he's kind of like Kshatriya, you know, protecting his neighbors and stuff. So you can see in many ways it's very natural. But the thing is, too, they get milk. They get milk from the cow, and fresh milk. You know. But you can see that, really, you can see as far as I can tell. One other thing, too, for example, if you walk down the road, the pathway. It goes back by the canal. The canal is only about like 2 or 3 feet wide. But it starts going through these forest areas and starts becoming a little more uneven. So people grow fruit there. And we saw one team of bulls coming right down. We had to step aside. The bulls were looking at us. And I asked Yadav, he said, yeah. Many people use teams of bulls here for planting and stuff like that, working like that, you know. So that way, it's very natural. I've seen many times Prabhupada talks about, even here, he talks about, what's the word, like, mechanized, you know, mechanized animal slaughter, you know. Yeah. And that's too much. I mean, here they kill the animals. Isn't that much? I have a suspicion they don't eat meat that much. I've heard that. It's just like many times in the jungle, I call it jungle in the mountains, they only eat meat when the cows die naturally. They don't kill them. You know, here I have a suspicion they'll go to a slaughterhouse. You know? But even that is still much less. You know, the whole thing, but still it does make people sinful. And that's, you can see it, the people here, that they have this hardness in their heart, this, you know, this cruelty that they, you know, they only think of themselves, you know, what they can get out of it, and they're not sensitive to other people's feelings like that, so it makes them hard like that, you know? So Prabhupada's saying, many places he says it's only possible to protect the animals when there's a government is there. Many times in the purport, right, Prabhupada is making this point that really these common people, they're not really to blame too much. You know, they're probably getting some reaction to this without a doubt, but it's not as much as, you know, somebody who's born with a higher culture and a higher consciousness or access to education and everything else. You see, they're very simple people. You know? And so but if the government comes around and there's a law and there are people inspecting it, for example, the police are also very personal here. They know everybody. They come and they go. They take bribes or whatever, you know, support, you know, point of service payment like that, yeah, bribery. So they come by, you know, and they can keep track of the cows. You know, hey, what happened to that cow? This and that, you know. And so if there are laws against slaughter and stuff like that, they can be very naturally enforced. And most people, like Prabhupada says, the common people, you don't have to just chastise them. You don't have to hit them. All you have to do is, you know, show the stick, and then they'll immediately accept everything. In the Parasara's Dharma Shastra, there are very severe punishments. Get your hands chopped off, all these things for different crimes. But the commentators say that this is only just to scare people. You know, some common person comes and he did something bad, and the king tells him very sternly, look, you know, according to the law, I can chop off both your hands right now. Of course, the person is terrified. He said, but I'm not going to do that. This time I'm going to let you go because I think you're a good man. You just made a mistake. But you be careful in the future. So, of course, the person says, yes. And so that's, you know, for the common people, there's this show of force is all you need. It actually says in Parasara's Dharma Shastra that the places of chastisement should be near the road, where common people can see them and they can hear people making unhappy sounds from where they're in, or even see them. You know, so that's how it's very natural. This society organizing it. We have some opportunity here to come in contact, you know, with the government at different levels and doing preaching also in India. So Krishna does 85% of the work. Maybe we'll be able to do 15, which is doubtful, but we'll try. Yeah, my God. So, and there, yeah, even some ideas. For example, an interfaith dialogue in Argentina. Jew, Muslim, Sufi, which is Muslim, Christian, and ourselves. And all like priests and everything else. And all very good people. They would be like temple presidents and GBC secretaries if they were in ISKCON. Very sincere. The Jewish fellow was Daniel Summerson. He was asking, he said, so you're a vegetarian? I said, yes. We're talking about it in the Bible and everything else. And the fact that, you know, the Bible comes from a desert area where there is no grains and vegetables. It was kind of like he was like kind of like coming to the conclusion himself But he said, yes, yes, if you can be vegetarian, that's the best. If you can be vegetarian, that's the best. You know? And so Pioneer has one horse, it's called Thunder. His horse is called Thunder. You know? And one cow, little cows, calf. And they're going to see. They're going to see that he doesn't kill the cow, he doesn't, that kind of stuff. So just by seeing this, that people, they themselves make this declaration, yeah, you're right, that is, it is the best thing. You know? So anyway, talking to the neighbors and preaching and supplying some alternative, but really, Father's saying, really, that most people, they can't understand by, you know, by hearing. They have to have, you know, some authority just comes and tells them what to do. You know? And that's the way it's going to be. Living so close to Yadu, like just across the fence like that and stuff, there's some chance that, you know, because they're evangelicals also, I would think they might pick up on it. But then it's a whole practical matter. Because, you know, they're very simple, and how do we get any money? You know, how do we take care of ourselves? So it's a thing, you know, growing the rice and harvesting it, and you know, a big experiment here. But they're very practical. It's actually one of the only places I've seen, well, outside of India, where devotees actually are doing this, like a, you know, cash crop type thing with grains and so on. But it's very normal because people are used to it. You know? So that's kind of the only thing I would notice. Let me see the points here. The purport, Papa says, yeah, there has to be a king like Maharaj Pariksit. And of course, he gives the example of the cows, you know, they come from the form of the Sarabi cows in Goloka. And so, we can experience that. You know, the cows are actually, the devotees eat a lot of bananas here. Very nice bananas. So the cows like the banana peel. And as soon as you start walking towards the fence, because the cows are next to the fence, they come over like that, like children, to get their banana peels. Yeah? So you can begin to appreciate, this is how it is in the spiritual world. And the cows are friendly, playful. Yeah? And they have these forms. You know, of course, in the story of after Indra, when Indra comes to apologize to Krishna, there are nice prayers by Sarabi there. And of course, Prabhupada is again repeating this point too, that there may be like agitation to protect the cows and the bulls, but he said unless there are laws and everything else, you know, you can't happen like that. So our preaching has to go. It starts with Brahminical culture, but it expands itself, you know, to the Kshatriyas who then apply it. It's always the way it works like that. Yeah. And Kshatriyas are satisfied. Brahmanas are satisfied. Higher class Vaishyas are satisfied with their occupation and their life. But then the Shudra, people in that level of consciousness, are not devotees. You know, there's India is there. They want. They don't feel satisfied with what they have. And so therefore they're covetous. They covet their neighbor's wife, land, ass, all these kind of things like that. Yeah. Actually, Isha Bhakshavidam Sarvam Yakinshaya Jagatyam Jagat Tena Tiyaktena Bunjitaha Magridya Kashasvidanam. There's enough for everybody, you know. And if we follow our quota, then we'll experience that. And the purport, Prabhupada especially emphasizes this point of not killing animals. I mentioned this point, maybe I mentioned it before, that I was typing away on our Microsoft Word program. I typed, the cow, she did this, you know, and the autocorrect said, no, the cow, it did this. Yeah. So the robot is convinced that the cows are machines. Also with Daniel Summerstein, too, we're talking about somebody asked this question about what is the soul. All the different religious groups. And interesting because many of the philosophies we discuss in the Bhagavatam are actually very practically present. You know? So the Judaic idea is that the soul is like the coffee in a cup. So when you pour the coffee out of the cup, when you die or something, most of it's gone, but always a little bit of coffee will still be there in the cup. So therefore, the cup is given a little bit of respect. So it was his idea about his, you know, community and Judaic tradition is that the soul, yeah, it's different than the body, but it kind of sticks with the body too. So I think more like what they're talking about is prana in many cases like that. which of course is spirit, respiration, is prana, the idea commonly of prana being the life. And you can see that level. You can see that beyond the visual level is the spirit, which makes that the visual level move. And beyond that, coming to the acoustical level of sound and space, the soul. But our religious processes, especially in the Kali Yuga, evangelicals also, they sing a fair number of songs. When you go by their church, you can see them seated there. Very simple place, very simple, very wooden benches, nothing fancy. But the priest, and sometimes they go all night. The priest will be there. He'll be reading some stories about Jesus. And then they'll sing some songs together. So it's basically Shravanam Kirtan. And because of that, it's the Kali Yuga Dharma. One can get a taste. Yeah, one can get by that sublime process, that sublime principle of Krishna Katha, one can actually get a taste, of the transcendental activity, transcendental world. Even though one is engaged in these lowest of the most abominable activities of seeing other living creatures as as not being alive, like that, denying the Atma. So just look at our thoughts, maybe somebody else has some ideas. And also how to build up this ISKCON, of course. Of course, we're right here, and this is one project, and it's difficult, but devotees are coming here, devotees are moving here. Some of the devotees, we're thinking of moving here. I think a lot of places I see other ISKCON sannyasis, and people are really supporting this. Radhanath Maharaj, Reverend Bhakti, Radhanath Maharaj definitely are supporting my moving back to the country now. And very practical moves, very economically practical. So this is what kind of report from here in terms of cow development. And a Brahminical culture, regular artiks here and stuff. But it has to be increased. More like that, if the Vaishyas here, they don't come along with artik all the time. But they support the idea, and they appreciate, this is important, And not our nature, it's a little difficult for us. So we want to support it, like that. So supporting Brahminical culture and cow protection, and then we'll get real peace. And that's a miracle, to actually get peace in the Kali Yuga with mosquitoes and the quarrels in the family, economic pressure. Wow. For these two things, protecting the cows and the Brahmins. So I was also going to ask some ideas about Gadadhar Pandit today. Anybody have any comments at this point? Anything else like that? Questions?
Yeah. All right. I have unmuted everybody on free conferencing. So if anyone has a question or a comment, I actually have two questions, but I'm going to wait to see if anybody else would like to add something. Anybody? Well, I'll begin. Maharaj, we hear it very often how milk is liquid religiosity. Now, my wife told me that her family, because they were in former Soviet Union, they got shipped off to Siberia, and they just had one cow with a broken horn and just a little tit, and she could hardly get any milk. Old cow, but because of that cow, they survived from starvation. So, it's such a valuable animal. However, as far as liquid religiosity, can you, I accept it, of course, as being a devotee, but I actually don't understand what that means.
I think Prabhupada explains two things, as I remember. One is that you can get ghee. And so ghee can be used for fire sacrifices. Ghee can be offered to the demigods and to Krishna. I guess also in the form of cooked foods, too, like that. But that's one aspect is that, the milk produces ghee, and then ghee can be used for sacrifice, religious sacrifice. The other thing is that it fertilizes very, very fine cerebral tissues. And then by those fine tissues, then it's possible to understand spiritual life. Yeah. So then that's why it becomes
all sufficient. I'm sorry, somebody new had just come in. I guess they didn't know they needed a mute.
Yeah. So those two things, we can get ghee for fire sacrifices, and we can develop the fine intelligence necessary to understand spiritual life.
Okay. But there's so many people that drink milk that don't ever think about spiritual life, or it doesn't seem to affect their spiritual life. You know, you go in, there's a dairy department in every grocery store, so and even and you can make this argument that there is vegans out there, lots of vegans, and generally they're spiritually minded people, so that argument can be made. I don't mean to give you a hard time, but I'm just trying to press the point so that I can understand it fully.
Yeah, one thing is that of course, you know, vegan culture, as far as I understand, the rishis who were living in the forest many times would not have cows. They might have, they had their ashram and everything else, but many times they would just live on fruits and roots and leaves and stuff like that. That's okay if you don't have any kind of administrative work to do. And Prabhupada is saying that the milk also gives you the energy for psychological work. So a brahmana who is an advisor to the kings, you know, like today we had a class from 8 to 9:45, one class, and then from 10 to 10:45 another class, and now this one. So I can see, I just without some milk with sugar, it's like you can't do it. You know, your brain's becoming exhausted. You know, get headaches, everything else. You know? So that in that sense, that you can be a vegan, but you won't have the intellectual and psychological strength necessary to do much sankirtan, to really argue with people, to make plans, to enter into the mode of passion, and organize stuff like that. You know? Other than that, there's somebody. Many people have made this comment that the white stuff you get in the grocery markets does not have a lot of connection with milk. It's like, you know, it's the oxytocin is spun this way and that. It's homogenized. It's sticking out. The actual cows that give it are, you know, are like terrified. You know, horrible position of consciousness. There's actually pus in the milk or something. You know. And so it's actually bad for you in some ways, the milk you're getting in the stores. In California, where we were, people knew that different dairies had different standards. Clover was run by a Christian family, and they would like be nice to the cows until they sent them down the road. Other places, the cows would never touch the ground. They were simply in these iron cages and would be lifted by big conveyor belts to the milking area, to the antibiotic area, and always, you know, you can imagine that their consciousness, they would die like within 6 years or something, you know. It's hell, you know. And so their milk, you can imagine what that is, you know. So that's one thing, is homogenized milk and low-fat milk. Yeah, the real fat is the thing to give you the brain substance. And other than that, I would say, but people are spiritually inclined. America, of course, has always been like what a big kind of like dairy country in terms of that, you know, drink your milk. And so America is the only country in the world, as far as I know, that has the name of God on its money. Maybe in Nepal somebody said, but other than that, so nobody knows of any other country that has the name of God on their money. And yeah, it did once it is basically like it was a survey, for example. Do you go to some spiritual meeting two times or more a week? And they were including yoga like that too. Do you go to some kind of spiritual meeting at least two times or more a week? So India came in first place, United States came in second place. It was some time ago. You know. But I would say, yeah, there is some effect in terms of people, you know, the supporting principles like you know, truthfulness, cleanliness, mercy, austerity, those kind of things. So again, if people drink milk, we could expect it to kind of be more clean, more regulated. That they won't be like, you know, people drinking alcohol and just dirty clothes and stuff hanging everywhere, you know, infections at that. That's what I would understand.
Well, thank you, Maharaj.
Uh-huh.
I have another question. Unless somebody else does, I can wait. My second question was, as far as Goraksha being the occupation of Avaisha, here we're seeing that Maharaj Parikshit, he is taking the role of immediately chastising somebody that is hurting a cow and a bull. And in the purport, it says that only someplace that has, you know, a pious king on the level of Maharaj Parikshit is able to properly protect cows and bulls. So then what would the difference be between a Kshatriya and a Vaishya? Because a Vaishya's duty is Goraksha. So what's the distinction here?
No, I think, again, as the Prabhupada says, there has to be laws. So the king, you know, the king protects the Vaishyas as he keeps them from doing sinful activities. He engages them in proper activities. And the Vaishya then engages the cows in proper activities, keeps them on the right path. You know, so on. Keeps them from being protected by animals, from bad animals, and the king then protects the vices from being protected by bad words and bad ideas. If somebody's preaching like animal slaughter, then the king will come and stop it. You know, the newspapers, magazines, he won't allow those things to be published or circulated. You know, like that. So that's what I understand still, the king. Yeah, the king is like responsible all the way down to the lowest level, but he does it through people. You know, that's the true people. Actually, specifically in the Parasura Dharma Shastra, it's talking about apad dharma, you know, dharma during difficult times. And it says that a brahmana can adopt the activity of a vaishya, but it says he can't touch the plow. Because, of course, the plow cuts the earth and causes so much, you know, problems. If little creatures, I guess even the earth is feeling like her skin's being cut, maybe, you know. So it's considered too sinful. So he can do other things, but he can't do that. He can't go down to the level of actually, you know, using the plow to cut the earth. So I would say the same thing. You know, the Kshatriya, he does it through people. But he maintains the principle and the perspective, but he doesn't do it himself. But the Vaishyas, they're there, putting up fences, you know, watching to diseases, you know, taking care of all the things necessary.
Okay, good answer. Thank you.
Ah.
Good. Perhaps you could comment for us on, in the purport, Prabhupada says, in the material world, the human society gives all protection to the human being, but there is no law to protect the descendants of Sarabi. It seems that's failing. Giving all protection to the humans, not only do we see this terrible, rampant abortion all throughout the world, but even governments systematically often killing their own people. Maybe you could comment on how that's become a one of the problems, one of the defects, one of the anomalies in the age of Kali.
I think in general, because you read the Bible and everything else, there was always these genocides going on. You know, even the Christians in the Bible, you know, they were like engaging. God was telling them, you know, to kill everybody, you know, this and that. So in general, I think it's like it's always been going on. It hasn't been all protection for human beings like that. But generally in civilized states, you know, that point goes on that nobody can kill a child or nobody can kill a human being like that. That's you know, forbidden like that. That's all I would kind of think of. What's the one about killing people? All protection. Ah, that's another idea. That's what, yeah, I thought the same thing when I read that. Because, yeah, I think we used to be talking about it, but thinking about, yeah, how it's gotten worse. And, well, yeah, that was the thing. Historians we've talked to, they make this comment that World War I was a big change in the general atmosphere of society. Because before that, war was always fought with, like, people well-decorated, and there was this idea of honor. You know, that somebody would fight for honor, and if somebody surrendered, you accept their surrender. And you wouldn't, like, kill people, just butcher them. It was just like it had to be a fair fight, you know? And so that stopped in World War One. In the World War One, the idea became mechanized murder. Just kill as many people as you can, however you can do it with gas, with machines, with machine guns, indiscriminately kind of mow them down. And they said it was something like 85% of the Oxford students, you know, were killed during the war. So then those were, of course, all the people who were like, you know, learning what is culture, studying, reading, following the Greek traditions, the Christian fathers, their writings. So at that point, there was a big change, like in terms of, you know, the level of the human society at World War One. And before that, and of course, that's Prabhupada, right? Prabhupada was there, no? He was growing up. Actually, what were these purports written? And where were they written? And maybe find that in India, yeah, it just didn't go on so much. I think in general, this genocide was something that was brought in from the outside. I mean, it wasn't Krishnaites and Vaishnavas, but in South India, but in general, I mean, there was this thing in India. I even see it now. People are fighting, but something falls to the ground, they won't kick on it, stomp on it, they wait for it to get back up. I mean, these riots and stuff is amazing. You can help him up. I saw that. Then he started fighting again. You know?
You almost have to ask the question, when did this word genocide come about? I mean, it's the fact that there's a word for it.
Genghis Khan was pretty famous for it. You know, Genghis Khan was a very strategic guy. He would like use it as a propaganda tool. Like he would annihilate some town, that other towns, rather than try to hold out, they would surrender. Okay, we better be surrender now and become subservient rather than holding out and get annihilated. But that far back, you know, always, you know, the Romans also would engage in big, you know, the Bible describes, you know, coming and destroying an entire town, killing every animal, dog, human being, and then plowing the ground with salt. very, very, the Bible is full of, wow, heavy stuff. Genocide and everything else.
But this is all within the ancient Kali. This is all within the last 5,000 years.
Yeah, and I would say even more recently than that. If you even go back, to, you know, back before, right after Krishna, still going to find some kind of like some of the features of more like this. People just don't think about that. You don't think about killing people or killing animals. You know, it's just not because they're people. They are. You raise them up. You have space for them. You take care of them. Yeah. Like that, and it's okay. They're fine. It's enough for everybody. The cows can retire. You know, they're nice. You know, like that. You know. Today is Gadadhar Pandit's appearance day, and we're reading some things that Gadadhar Pandit, another name for Lord Chaitanya, is Gaurangera Nata. No, name for Gadadhar Pandit is Gaurangera Nata. Era means of. Gaurangera Nata. Gadadhar Gosai. That Gadadhar, of course, Gadadhar is the incarnation of Rukmini. And so his mood, what I understand, I've heard, that Gadadhar is Radharani bereft of her feelings. That she's kind of complaining about this. Lord Chaitanya is dressing up like a woman and engaging in all these emotions and histrionics and crying, you know. So Gadadhar is kind of in the mood of like, well, what is the idiot doing? Come on now, you know. Those are my feelings. Give them back to me. And so Gadadhar is like Radharani bereft of her sentiments. And she's complaining about it like Radharani, how Radharani complains about things. And this is from Gaur Govinda Maharaj. And anybody who supports, you know, Gadadhar, in this position that Lord Chaitanya should give up all these kind of things and give the sentiments back to Gadadhar. But later on, when they do come back to her, because she, property comes back to his owner, then we'll get a lot of good reward. So this is an internal thing of relationship between Lord Chaitanya and Gadadhar, Gaur Gadadhar. Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur worshipping Gaur Gadadhar, and Prabhupada worshipping Gaur Nitai. So very, very nice discussions about all these different details. Basically, in Majalila, Anchalila, chapter 7, verse 17, there's a very nice discussion about the Panchatattva and the position of Gadadhar and Srinivas. And of course, Srinivas is being worshiping Krishna, Mahaprabhu, Advaita, in the mood of servitorship or parental affection. And then Gadadhar is in the mood, of course, of conjugal love. You know? That's the internal potency and the marginal potency. The marginal potency can also be full of pure devotees. It's interesting because in that purport, Adilila 7:17, Prabhupada quotes the song Gorangera Bolite Habe Pulaka Sarir. That's the first song from Prarthana. So we see a whole summary of all the contents of Prarthana in that one song, you know, from beginning to end. And also Prabhupada quotes lines from that again and again. It's one of the two songs that Prabhupada quotes in all of his books. The other one is Narada Muni Bhajadina, except for Sai Ra Vijajal. It's more like a prayer. You know? So such a nice song to memorize and contemplate. The purport is so nice. It describes all the different levels. By the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, we first get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, then Nityananda. We get the mercy of Nityananda, we can become free from bad activities and bad thoughts. When the bad thoughts go, we can actually see Vrindavan. When we see Vrindavan, then we can get the mercy of the Manjaris, Rupa and Raghunath, and then we can understand the confidential pastimes of Radha and Krishna, and actually begin to participate. That's what Prarthana, the song of Prarthana, is taking us through all that by different levels of songs, as far as I've heard it. And the first song is a summary. Then the next purport, right after that, Prabhupada continues, and he says, this is very nicely summarizing Upadeshamrita, our book. And then he paraphrases text number 10. The go karma dhyā parito hare, and all the different levels of people are there, all the way from karmis, all the way up to gyanis, bhaktas, and finally bhajuya bhaktis, and bhaktas of Radharani, like that. So we should be practical. We should be aspiring. You know, we've got an opportunity to come in contact with Lord Chaitanya's movement. We should be promoting, we should be supporting Brahminical culture and cow protection, and then we'll get peace, and then we can actually get, go more and more deeper into these things and actually cultivate, you know, these actual change of heart. Yeah. In the beginning, it's raganuga, it's like imitation. But we're imitating not to enjoy, we're imitating to reach the real thing, of waking up our real nature so that Krishna can enjoy our company like that. Because we're all different, and so Krishna wants to enjoy all of us, but right now we're asleep. So that's kind of our little thought about Gadadhar. Gorangera Nija Shakti Gadadhara Gosai. Nija Dasi. One's own, oneself, one's, your own. Nija means your own. So Gorangera Nija Shakti. Gadadhar Pandit is the personal potency of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Gorangera Nija Shakti Gadadhara Gosai. So one who knows Gadadhar, you know, is in a very, very, very fortunate position like that. So that's our thought. Anybody else have any thoughts about Gadadhar?
Maharaj, I just wanted to relate something that Harsh Prabhu just put in the chat, for because I evidently he can't talk. But interesting that he's saying that, did you know that India is now the world's third largest exporter of beef?
I didn't know that. But of course, it's a big country, too. Population. Wow. Yeah, because they can't sell internally. I guess it's part of the thing. They can't do it so much internally. And in many places, it used to be prohibited, right? You know, the sale, you know, in many states, cow slaughter was prohibited, but I think some of the states have changed their rules now. You know? They were driving old cows and stuff, putting pepper in their eyes, twisting their tails, horrible stuff. They forced them on these death marches to get them across the border, and then killing them for all these purposes like that. Prabhupada says the Brahmins and the Kali Yuga will become the most degraded because they have the most intelligence and everything else. So I mean, in India, it's not surprising to find in some ways the most horrible things go on, you know, because they have all the potency. As culture and everything else, and you really abuse it.
Another thing he's saying here is that the state where it has the largest export, at least that's what I understand what he's saying here, is Uttar Pradesh, where there's Ayodhya and Mathura.
Wow. Wow. But it's also the biggest state, too. It used to be the biggest, Uttar Pradesh, big population quantity. Yeah. Wow. Well, it's actually 12:30 here, so I guess we have to go because we've got a program at 1 o'clock here to get ready. I'm going to go to the talk to a radio disc jockey in town here. He got a book. He's interested. So we'll maybe talk about supplying some stories from Uttar Pradesh or something. Once a week, you can quote some tales from India, again, something like that. And it's like people are interested. They're curious. They go out, they're curious, who are you? And so everywhere, wherever we go, wherever we meet, tell them about Krishna.
Right.
So thank you all very much. Actually, next Friday, what's going to happen? Let's see. We'll be, okay, wow. Okay, because I think, oh boy, yeah, because I think next Friday we have a program at noontime at back in Lima at the university there. So you may not be able to participate then. So we'll see. Then after that, we'll be in Radovish next Friday after that.
Oh.
But then we'll be like so many hours ahead of you. It'll actually be in the afternoon or something in Europe. And so, anyway, we'll definitely stay in touch if you let us and then participate in these programs. It's really nice for us, the association. It's really...
Thank you so much, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Jai, thank you, Maharaj Hari Bol.
Jai,
Srila
Prabhupada.
Jai.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.